Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today on our show, we'll have the latest news on the recount efforts in the presidential election, learn about a settlement in the Trump University case. Then we'll have updates in some close local races, including a surprising upset in an East County mayoral race and some other contests that are still too close to call. We'll have news about some great hikes for the anniversary of Anza Borrego Desert State Park, and we'll tell you about a shocking collapse of a massive wind turbine in Ocotillo. From Public News Service, here's some new facts about why planting trees is so important. It's been a wet weekend across our region, bringing much-needed rain as well as snow on Mount Laguna, and we'll have details on those storm totals on today's show. On Crime Beat, we'll have a warning from San Diego State University Police about some crimes on campus, and from Public News Service, a story about efforts to help young people escape sex trafficking by establishing youth safety zones at police and fire stations and hospitals. Our newsmaker interview today is with Tony Mastardo. He's the director of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, and he'll be talking about their anniversary and their delightful Chansons de Noël holiday concert coming up this Sunday. On Sounds of History, we'll take you back in time with recollections of Dr. Ian McGregor, reflecting on a holiday season long, long ago in East County. Then on Destination East County, hear about some great events coming up this holiday season across our region, from concerts to festivals to an outdoor ice skating rink and more. Then on Sports, hear about Jimmy Johnson's latest record-setting win. On Vines and Wines, learn about the county's new food safety rules for wineries and breweries. We'll also have news about a horse rescue group in need out in the Alpine area after thieves stole two golf carts needed to feed their animals. And we'll end our show today with a little bit of country Christmas music, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Democrat Hillary Clinton's campaign has announced that it will join the effort to recount ballots in key swing states. That effort was launched by Green Party candidate Jill Stein, who has raised millions of dollars to fund recounts in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and possibly additional states. Clinton leads in the popular vote by over 2 million votes nationwide, but lost the electoral votes. About 100,000 votes separate Clinton and Trump in the three states slated for recounts, and it would take a shift to Clinton in all three to change the election outcome. Clinton's campaign counsel, Mark Elias, has said the campaign's own investigation has not found evidence of a hack, and at this point, Clinton is not contesting an election outcome. But her campaign is participating in the recount launched by Stein to ensure that it is fair to all sides, he said. President-elect Donald Trump has denounced the recount efforts as a scam to raise money, even though Stein says her funds are in a dedicated account that cannot be used for anything else. Trump's campaign manager Kellyanne Conway called the Clinton and Stein campaigns a pack of sore losers for seeking the recount, despite the fact that Trump himself had previously suggested the election could be rigged. Trump has drawn criticism from mainstream media and fact-checkers after claiming that he was robbed of millions of votes by people voting illegally without providing a shred of evidence to back up that claim. Stein launched the recall effort after computer and election experts raised concerns about potential for hacking of voting machines. The Green Party has asked for a reconciliation of paper records that goes beyond a recount to assess the accuracy of voting machines and whether any malware could have been inserted to change votes. Shortly before the election, ABC News reported that Russia had attempted to hack 20 states' election systems and successfully breached four of them. ABC cited key sources at Homeland Security and the FBI, who voiced concerns about efforts to hack the U.S. presidential election. Hacks were also made into Clinton's campaign emails. Meanwhile, a separate effort has been launched to persuade electors to the Electoral College to change their votes. At least six have said they actually will do so, tying a historic record for so-called faithless electors, though that would still fall far short of the total needed to change the election outcome. Some states have laws to prohibit electors from voting their conscience or changing their vote to support whoever wins the popular vote, in this case Mrs. Clinton. Now, a lawsuit has been filed on behalf of one delegate seeking to challenge that law. But even in the unlikely event that the Electoral College were to vote for Clinton instead of Trump for president or choose a compromise candidate, that still does not make Trump a loser. The Constitution provides that in such a case, the House of Representatives would choose the next president, and the House is controlled by Republicans by an overwhelming margin. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
President-elect Donald Trump has agreed to pay $25 million to settle class-action lawsuits representing thousands of students who alleged fraud and racketeering involving the now-defunct Trump University. The settlement announcement Friday came just an hour before U.S. District Judge Gonzalo Curiel was set to hear arguments on a motion by Trump's attorneys to postpone the trial slated to begin November 28th in San Diego. Curiel earlier this month denied a motion by Trump's legal team that sought to exclude campaign statements and videos as evidence. An attorney for the plaintiffs, Jason Forge, called the deal a great result, adding that $21 million of those $25 million will stay in San Diego to reimburse students for losses here. The rest will go to Trump University students in New York. Students in the class action case should ultimately receive at least half of their money back under the agreement. Trump did not admit liability under the settlement terms. He previously claimed Curiel's Mexican ancestry should disqualify him from the case due to bias after Trump pledged to deport undocumented Mexican immigrants, even though Curiel was born in the U.S. and is a citizen, so he could not be deported. The prospect of a trial in which questions about Trump's ethics and business practices would have been raised had cast a pall over Trump's election as he began preparations to be sworn in as president in January. Trump's lead attorney called the settlement agreement a victory for everybody, but it may be a loss for the public, who will now never learn whether or not the next president of the United States willfully defrauded students or violated federal racketeering laws. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
This is Miriam Raftery with some surprising twists in the Lemon Grove elections. On election night, George Gastel held lead over Raquel Vasquez in Lemon Grove's mayoral race. But by morning, Vasquez was on top, and her margin has now grown to 120 votes, close to 1%. On Saturday, Gastel posted on Facebook, there are still some provisional ballots being counted, but not enough to make a difference. Late absentee ballots gave Vasquez the edge, he said, adding, it was an energetic and positive campaign with a record number of people voting in a Lemon Grove mayoral election. I called Raquel Vasquez and congratulated her, he said. Vasquez took a more cautious approach, posting on her Facebook page, we think there may be approximately 300 more votes out there that have not been counted. Until then, I am humble and grateful for your support and the opportunity to run for mayor of Lemon Grove. East County Magazine hosted a debate among Lemon Grove's mayoral candidates, including Gastel and Vasquez, both Democrats, as well as Teresa Rosiak, a Republican who finished a distant third in this heavily Democratic and diverse community. Gastel has held office in Lemon Grove since 1998, when he was elected to serve on the Lemon Grove School Board before winning a city council seat in 2008. Vasquez was elected to the council in 2012. She works full-time in communications for construction projects in the city of San Diego. She was the first African-American woman elected to the council in this diverse community and will be the first African-American mayor in San Diego County. A common theme of her campaign has been her goal of improving the quality of life for Lemon Grove residents and making Lemon Grove, quote, a world-class city. She is also the founder of Thrive Lemon Grove. Councilmember Jerry Jones has voiced commitment to help the new mayor succeed, but he also voiced concern over a potential conflict of interest due to Vasquez having a full-time job with the city of San Diego. On Facebook, he posted, whatever our differences, I am committed to the success of Lemon Grove, and that means the success of the mayor and council. But, he adds, how this conflict of interest is handled is initially up to the incoming mayor. A second item before voters in Lemon Grove has also flipped since election night. Initially, a ballot proposition to legalize and regulate medical marijuana dispensaries was trailing, but it now appears likely to win passage thanks to late mail-in ballots tallied. The Registrar of Voters has until December 8th to complete the count and certify the final election results. Now here's an update on some more close races in East County. It's clear that both incumbents on the Helix Water District Board have lost their seats. Mark Grasick won a resounding victory over incumbent Chuck Muse in District 3, picking up nearly 58% of the vote, while Muse got just 18%, and Eric Collins, another challenger, got 24%. But in District 1, with four candidates in the running, the positions have shifted since election night. Incumbent John Linden is still in third place with only 25% of the vote, and Aaron Zajac, in a distant fourth place, has 5%. However, on election night, Dan McMillan appeared to have a solid win with 37% to Lou Tejeda at 31%. But now, with many more late mail-in ballots counted, McMillan's lead has shrunk to just 7 votes, with the two in a near-dead heat at just under 35% each. McMillan had strong name recognition with voters, having served on both the Padre District Municipal Water District Board and the San Miguel Fire District Board. However, Tejeda may have gotten a boost from a late-breaking story that revealed someone at Helix Water District illegally leaked a personnel file on Tejeda to the press, which showed a proposed disciplinary action against him many years ago. Tejeda fired back that that action was in retaliation for a discrimination claim he filed against the district. Helix has said it's investigating the leak, which may have sparked a backlash in Tejeda's favor. Another close race is in the Alpine Union School District, where 2 seats are up for election. Joseph Perricone is still solidly in first place with over 29% of the vote and 708 votes more than Travis Lyon. Lou Russo had briefly pulled ahead of Lyon, but Russo now trails Lyon again by 63 votes. A key issue in the Alpine race is whether the district should continue funding a lawsuit against the Grossmont Union High School District over bond funds to build an Alpine high school. Lyon is supported by backers of the Alpine High School, while Russo has said he believes money spent on litigation would be better used to fund classroom supplies or hire more teachers. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
In celebration of Anza Borrego Foundation's 50th anniversary, the Anza Borrego Foundation and Anza Borrego Desert State Park are inviting visitors to complete 2 5-hike challenges on some of the most famous and infamous peaks and trails in the region. 5 Hikes for 50 Years is a campaign to introduce visitors to the many wonders of California's largest state park. The family-friendly trails will be completed independently by hikers and range from the popular and well-traveled Borrego Palm Canyon Nature Trail to less visited hikes in more remote areas of the park, such as Mountain Palm Springs. These hikes are free, though there is a per-vehicle entry fee at one of the sites. The 5 hikes for 50 years are the Borrego Palm Canyon Nature Trail, the Slot, Pictograph Trail, Calkite Mine, and Mountain Palm Springs Loop. When visitors finish all 5 hikes, they will receive a signed certificate from the park and a commemorative 50th anniversary sticker. Using the 5 hikes for 50 years participant packet, hikers will need to complete all 5 hikes in any order by June 1st of next year. Then take a selfie shot at an identifiable location unique to each hike. Once all 5 hikes have been completed, hikers must send an email containing their selfies or group photos to info@theabf.org. Detailed information on how to participate and complete the hiking challenge can be found at theabf.org/5hikes. To celebrate its 50th anniversary, Anza Borrego Foundation has also planned guided hikes to 5 of the most iconic peaks in Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Hikers will be led by fitness enthusiast and popular hike leader Mike Puzo for Mike's hikes during the desert season. The trails, Topping Whale, Indian Head, Villager, Sombrero, and Sunset Peaks, are strenuous, fast-paced hikes intended for experienced hikers in good physical condition. All hikes will travel off-trail with a significant amount of elevation gain and loss. There are fees for Mike's hikes, and you can get details on these at theabf.org/5peaks. Additional anniversary programming and events will be announced by Anza Borrego Foundation throughout the desert season. To learn more, plan your visit, Become a member or volunteer. Visit the ABF for Anza Borrego Foundation.org, the ABF.org. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jim Brewster with a Crime Beat report. San Diego State University's campus police are warning students about two strong-armed robberies. Both involved the thefts or attempted thefts of students' cell phones. The first crime occurred outside a residence hall on East Campus Drive. The suspect stole the victim's phone and fled with another male toward a nearby Jack in the Box. The second crime was on College Avenue. A young man tried to grab a student's phone, but it fell to the ground, and the suspect fled with a second male toward the east side parking area. The phone was recovered. No one was injured in either incident. According to witnesses, the suspects were both African Americans. One was described as in his early 20s, about 5 feet 8 or 5 feet 9 inches tall, wearing dark clothing. The second suspect was 16 to 20 years old, tall and slender, wearing dark jeans and a black hooded sweatshirt with the hood up. Campus police advise students and visitors to be aware of your surroundings. While in transit from one place to another, keep your phone out of sight and immediately report suspicious activity by dialing 911. Anyone with information should contact Detective Barrett at 619-594-1987. You can remain anonymous by contacting Crime Stoppers at 619-235-8477.
California has three of the top 13 hotspots for child sex trafficking: Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Francisco. And now LA and Long Beach are launching a new safe youth zone to help young victims escape. On Tuesday, officials launched the pilot program, which prepares police and fire stations to be able to take care of a young person who is running from his or her sex trafficker. Michelle Guyman with the Los Angeles Probation Department says this program refocuses previous safe house efforts to specifically reach out to kids in this type of crisis.
It's force that literally keeps them stuck. And so when kids try to escape that, the level of desperation does escalate. And so they are looking for that safe place where they can get some support and help.
The program will likely be enlarged to include hospitals as well. A large yellow sticker will be displayed on the front door of each facility. Once a young person takes refuge in a safe youth zone, a team will be called in to find the child a place to stay and connect him or her with counseling and other services. Guyman says law enforcement will start promoting the Safe Youth Zone program in schools, in the foster system, in youth shelters, and in juvenile hall, and says more than 130 kids in the LA area alone came forward last year and admitted to being trafficked for sex.
Kids have not been arrested for prostitution, but are disclosing that this is happening because we're more sensitive than I think we used to be when we labeled them as teenage prostitutes, which was not a sensitive way to really approach the issue.
Recently, Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that prevents police from arresting minors involved in the sex trade unless it is for their own safety. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report from Santee. The City of Santee's Department of Development Services will host a public meeting Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on the controversial Castle Rock housing project, and that meeting will be held in City Hall. According to a city notice, representatives from the developer Pardee Homes, as well as the cities of Santee and San Diego, will be on hand to answer questions from residents. Construction of Castle Rock, just west of Santee Lakes off of Mass Boulevard, began earlier this year and soon caused complaints from nearby residents over impacts related to grading, traffic, noise, and environmental concerns. The project, which has been in the works since 2003, consists of 415 homes, a four-acre public park, a multi-use trail, and public streets. It was approved in 2013 by the City of San Diego, and that same year, the Santee City Council approved annexing the 204-acre site. Last year, the San Diego Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, an agency that oversees jurisdictional boundary lines, approved that annexation. Santee City officials had voiced serious concerns over the project, but they were unable to block it since it was located in the city of San Diego, just over the border from Santee. Santee's council later decided that annexation was their best option, since the city would have to provide all of the services Unless the area was annexed, the city would lose out on all of the property tax revenues generated by the project to help defray those costs. The public meeting to hear residents' concerns again will be held this Tuesday, November 29th at 7 p.m. in Santee's City Hall.
This is Rebecca Williamson with news about a 500-foot-tall wind turbine at the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility that collapsed on Monday, November 21st, spewing debris and three blades, each weighing many tons, across the desert floor. East County Magazine photographer Jim Pelley, an Ocotillo resident, says the other 111 turbines kept spinning for over an hour before a pattern official arrived and the entire project was de-energized. Pelley told East County Magazine that the ground was not saturated from rainfall and the foundation is intact, raising serious questions as to what caused the massive turbine to collapse and whether others could have a design or engineering flaw that could lead to similar failures. Winds were only 15 miles an hour or less during the 3 hours before the collapse. The tower bent into the wind, not away from it, and did not collapse at a joint in the three-piece tower, but in between. Edie Harmon was outside her home 5 miles south of the wind farm around 10:30 a.m. when she heard the turbine collapse. It sounded like a massive explosion. I thought a military jet had crashed into the ground, she said in a phone interview with East County Magazine. When she drove home Monday night after the project was de-energized, Harmon said, I didn't see lighting on any of them. I sure hope we don't have a low-flying border patrol plane. Harmon also voiced concerns over leakage of toxins into the ground and the aquifer below that provides the town's drinking water after such a major explosion. One witness told Pelley that blades were turning as the turbine collapsed and may have struck the tower. Pelley, an aerospace engineer, said Pattern put larger blades than the towers were originally built to hold in order to maximize production. He speculated that bending back and forth under heavier blades, which are on all the turbines, may have caused the tower's central section to collapse. While this turbine is in a remote location, others are located close to major roadways, including Interstate 8, as well as homes, a school, and public trails on the Federal Bureau of Land Management property. Park Ewing, who has a turbine near his home, posted on Facebook, are they going to wait for someone to be killed before these unreliable monsters are decommissioned? A reference to the fact that the project has failed to meet wind production capacity projections every year since it was built. An hour after the collapse, East County Magazine contacted the Bureau of Land Management, which was unaware of the accident. We also contacted Pattern Energy at its La Jolla headquarters, but the company did not respond to our call. However, Ocotillo Wind later posted a statement on its website stating that the turbine fell within the designated setback zone and no one was injured. Officials said they are working closely with the turbine manufacturer Siemens to identify the root cause of the failure, and a full investigation is also underway.
Drought-parched mountain areas in East County have received welcome relief from a pair of storms that swooped into the region over the weekend. Now, as of about noon on Sunday, the National Weather Service reported over 2.4 inches of rain fell at Lake Cuyamaca, with nearly 1.7 inches at Julian. Snow has fallen on taller mountain peaks, including over an inch on Mount Laguna. Some other local communities also received significant precipitation. Mount Woodson, Harbison Canyon, Descanso, Pine Valley, and Alpine all got over an inch of rain, even before a second storm swept the area Sunday night. Some communities in El Cajon, Ramona, Santa Isabel, and Lakeside all received over a half inch of rain, though only a trace fell in our inland desert regions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, high atop Monument Peak in Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery.
A new report that looks at the impact the trees have on our health finds we need to start planting more of them. The Planting Healthy Air Study from the Nature Conservancy looked at the potential impact of planting trees in specific cities to lower heat and pollution, and how that could affect health, especially in regards to asthma. The group's lead scientist, Rob McDonald, said trees provide shade and release water vapor into the air as they photosynthesize. Leaves remove particulate matter from the air around the trees, including toxins from auto exhaust and factory and power plant emissions.
Trees can reduce air temperatures nearby by 2 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit, and they're already doing that for tens of millions of people worldwide. And they can remove up to a quarter of the particulate matter concentrations in the atmosphere. atmosphere, so one of the most damaging kinds of air pollutions.
McDonald said heat waves are responsible for 12,000 deaths each year, killing more people globally than hurricanes or winter storms. Additionally, 3.2 million deaths annually can be attributed to fine particulate matter, a component of smog. The report says by 2050, this type of pollution could kill 6.2 million people every year. McDonald said elderly people face particular risk as the global climate shifts and average summer temperatures increase.
One forecast from the World Health Organization is that annual mortality from heat waves could reach 250,000 people by 2050 unless cities start to adapt. Smart cities are starting to think about heat action plans.
The study found if cities around the world invested $4 for every resident in tree planting, tens of millions of lives could be saved. For Public News Service, I'm Jerry Oster reporting.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County.
The music that you've just heard on our intro today was performed by the fabulous San Diego Chorus and Orchestra.
Today, my very special guest is Anthony Mastardo, the director of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now, it's been a couple of years since we interviewed you, and I understand that you have a marvelous holiday concert, Chansons de Noël, coming up on December 4th. Can you give us some details, first of all, about where that'll be and what people can expect?
The concert itself will be Sunday, December the 4th, and we perform at the College Avenue Baptist Church, a wonderful venue, seats about 1,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
We usually have experienced approximately 800 to 1,000 people in our concerts, and it is well attended. The acoustics are magnificent, and
marvelous.
Of course, with a full orchestra of 48 pieces and a 70-voice chorus, we produce some rather beautiful music, we think.
Now, the concert is going to be from 3 o'clock to 5 p.m., and you can get information on tickets at SanDiegoFestivalChorus.org. So, Anthony, can you tell us about what some of the works are that people can expect to hear? I understand it'll be a mix of classical and some contemporary and some holiday favorites.
Yes, our tradition is always to do something classical for the first half of the concert, which I direct.
Mm-hmm.
I have an assistant now. His name is Ron Council. He also teaches and works over at San Diego State University, a very fine musician. And he will direct the second part of our program, which always includes a lighter program of popular music or lighter classics.
Mm-hmm.
We do show tunes for the second half as well. Our concert for this December the 4th will feature two major works. One, a Te Deum that was written by Amadeus Mozart. He was 16 years old when he wrote this piece of music.
Yeah,
it's very short.
Such a child prodigy writing music,
yes,
starting
yes.
at, what, 3 years of age.
Yeah, I often told my chorus, I said, at 16, I was still learning how to walk.
There you go. And you're also doing the Christmas Oratorio.
Yes, the Christmas Oratorio by Camille Saint-Saëns, the composer of the Magnificent Organ Symphony, number 3. He also, the composer of Carnival of the Animals, a lot of choral music. He's done the magnificent orchestrations and very popular tunes, particularly at Halloween, the Danse Macabre, which is oftentimes played.
Mm-hmm.
But he's well known. He's a magnificent pianist, a great organist. He lived in the middle 1800s.
Yeah, the Romantic era of music.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we heard some of that wonderful Christmas oratorio at the beginning of our show today, and you'll get to hear some more listeners at the end of this interview.
So in addition to the classical works, you're also going to have some popular seasonal music. I love the names here for those of you folks that just can't resist all those holiday goodies. You have a piece called No Time to Diet.
Exactly.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Going to Bethlehem and all
going
sorts of
Bethlehem,
other.
Going to Bethlehem, exactly.
Nice.
Wonderful pieces of music.
Will there be traditional Christmas carols that people recognize
yes,
as well?
Yes, they will recognize many of them, done in an interesting form, a lot of new arrangements.
Mm.
So, for instance, Deck the Hall will be, for instance, a piece traditionally sung, at church concerts or whatever, but this one is actually written in 7/8 time.
Wow.
It's a very complex rhythmical kind of thing, but very enlightening and fun to sing.
Oh, I'm looking forward. I can't wait to go mm-hmm. see that and mm-hmm. hear that. Now, your chorus and orchestra has a very fascinating history. I understand that you're celebrating your 15th anniversary this year, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, we began September the 11th, 2001.
A very auspicious date with the date of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, of course.
In fact, how
did that affect your opening?
Well, it did affect us in some sort of way. We happened to be in Frankfurt, Germany at the time, vacationing, and we saw on the news and the TV the plane slamming into the towers, the Twin Towers.
That must have been horrifying.
It just was devastating. I mean, mm-hmm. when we saw what was happening, we couldn't believe it. My wife and I were actually trapped for 3 days.
Yeah, they had grounded all of the planes
in and out of the United States. In fact, they rerouted many of the airplanes. Our granddaughter, who was with us, was deviated. She ended up in Nova Scotia.
Oh, my.
And the airplanes actually couldn't even land because they were afraid what was going to happen. They turned them around and sent them back to Europe.
Wow.
It was really devastating.
Yeah.
But anyway, that date, of course, sticks in my mind, but we had a rehearsal scheduled for that very first day. And we had to make plans, of course, to cancel and reschedule
sure,
it.
Yeah.
But we have survived
the show
15 wonderful years. And so we will be celebrating our 15th anniversary this coming December the 4th. Yes.
Fabulous. Mm. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came mm-hmm, to start mm-hmm. this marvelous festival mm-hmm. chorus and orchestra.
Well, I do have a musical background. I attended the American Conservatory of Music, received my bachelor's degree there in applied piano. I attended DePaul University, received my Master of Music there. I attended Northern Illinois University and received my administrative degree in education. So in addition to being a principal for 35 years, I also delved in music during that period of time, conducted church choirs, formed community choruses. In fact, we began with another festival chorus name. It is the Harper College Festival Chorus, Community Chorus in Palatine, Illinois. We started with 35 members originally. We ended up with 150 at the time of my retirement in 1993. And after moving to California here in 1998, I missed something, and of course that was my music.
Sure.
So we started another group.
Beautiful. And it's just grown and grown since then, and of course you've added an orchestra in addition to a chorus. Now, can you give us information about the members of the chorus, if people are interested in perhaps joining it as a singer, or for that matter, joining the orchestra? What are the qualifications? Do you have to be a professional musician with a resume a mile long, or can anyone with some musical talent and interest audition?
Very good. Yes, we do not have major restrictions. If someone has sung in a church choir or a community chorus in the past, they're a prime member for a group. If they've studied a little bit of music, that also helps. We oftentimes have people who just simply walk in off the street just because they see music they enjoy for the second part of our program, and they mm-hmm. come and they are trapped. And they're invited and excited about the first part of the chorus program as well.
Beautiful.
And so we introduce them to a lot of classical music. Over the years, we have performed over 129 major choral works.
My goodness.
In that period of time. And about half of them are classical music, mm-hmm. and the other half, of course, lighter music.
How many concerts do you do each year?
We perform two major concerts, one in December before the holidays, and the other one in May, a spring concert. In addition to our major performances, we also do a lot of outreach performances. We also do a lot of traveling abroad.
Mm-hmm.
We've given concerts in the Balkans, in Scandinavia, in Dubrovnik, in England. Mm. We perform outreach performances there.
Now, how much time commitment is there, you know, per week or per month for the people that are involved in this? And is it at a volunteer activity? Mm-hmm. And how do you yes. fund the travel?
It's about 3 or 4 months between concerts. Mm-hmm. And that gives us approximately about 12 rehearsals mm-hmm. totally. And in that period of time, we're able to produce the music that we do.
Beautiful.
We hire non-professional musicians, although some of them have played in a number of different organizations here in San Diego, the San Diego Concert Band, the Tiferet Jewish Orchestra, mm-hmm. directed by David Amos, a very fine orchestra.
Yes.
And also other musicians from the area. Mm-hmm. Most of them are business people, but also play instruments.
Marvelous.
And they're thrilled to join us, and we have a wonderful group of people. We mm-hmm. call it our musical family.
How do you fund the travel overseas? Do you do fundraising for that, or do the members need to... It'll pay their own way? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just returned from an Alaskan concert cruise. We performed 2 concerts aboard the ship, the Coral Princess, and then we performed another 4 or 5 different concerts throughout the travels through Alaska. The highlight of our performance and travels was in the Denali National Park. We performed in the magnificent resort there.
Wonderful
with the backdrop
place.
Of Mount McKinley. It was just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It's a spectacular mm-hmm. natural setting. I've been there a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the choral members, are they volunteer or is that paid?
Our choral members are all volunteers. Mm-hmm. We rehearse every Monday night from 7 to 9:15. And, of course, just before our concerts, we stretch it out a little bit. We have some extra rehearsals.
Sure.
But totally, we have about 70 members, sometimes a few more, sometimes a few less, depending on the interest of their musical tastes and also what we schedule for performance.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listeners, it's such a wonderful group. If you have the opportunity, it's a great organization to support and go out and listen to and enjoy the Chansons de Noël concert coming up on December 4th with the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra at the College Avenue Baptist Church. We've been speaking with Anthony Mastardo, who is the director of the Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know that we haven't already talked about today?
Yes. Well, we welcome new members. That's the heart of our organization. Our main purpose and goal is to hopefully introduce people to new music. I know that oftentimes there are standards that are performed for the holidays, you know, such as the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
But we always look forward to introducing people to new classics.
Yes.
And new popular music, show tunes, and that kind of thing. So we're always looking for interested members that would enjoy an experience where they are being introduced to new music and also have a wonderful time by meeting other friends and making new acquaintances. Again, we rehearse every Monday night at the Hillsdale Middle School. We rehearse from 7 to 9:15, and we look forward to having you come. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful group of people who are anxious to see new members.
And based right here in East County. Listeners, if you want to get more information about either how to audition or join the chorus and orchestra or get tickets for this marvelous Chansons de Noël concert coming up, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org or you can go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org and check out our arts and music section and find it right there. Anthony, I want to thank you very much for joining us again today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure.
Sing his salvation. This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health alert. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has announced a voluntary recall of all hummus dip products made by the Sabra Company after Listeria was found at the manufacturing facility. Consumers with any product with a best before date of January 23, 2017 or earlier should throw away the product or contact Sabra for a refund. You can find a best before date on the lid of each package. The recall includes all hummus products made by Sabra except organic hummus. The recall also does not include other Sabra products such as guacamole, salsa, or Greek yogurt dip. Sabra's CEO, Shali Cheval, says consumer safety is a top priority and that a factory-wide cleaning and sanitation has been done to address the problem. Listeria is an organism which can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections in young children, frail or elderly people, and others with weakened immune systems. Healthy individuals may suffer only short-term symptoms such as a high fever, severe headaches, stiffness, nausea, abdominal pain, and diarrhea. Listeria infection can also cause miscarriages and stillbirths among pregnant women. For questions or information on how to get a refund, you can visit the website at sabrahummusrecall.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features
Jesus Christ Superstar at San Diego State, Breakfast with Santa in Santee, a Jingle Paws Walk for Pets, Lakeside Spirit on Main, and
a Chansons de Noël holiday concert.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The largest outdoor ice rink in Southern California is now open at Viejas through the holiday season until January 29th. Under the glow of holiday lights, guests and visitors can glide around the rink or enjoy seasonal goodies. You can feel the cool Pacific Mountain air on your face while you bunny hop, camel spin, and swizzle your way around the ice rink in Alpine. For details, you can visit viejas.com. The pop rock musical Jesus Christ Superstar will be presented at San Diego State University's Don Powell Theater on December 1 through 4. Performances will be at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, plus a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday. This explosive psychedelic concert with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber is a collaboration between the schools of theater, television, and film and music and dance, telling a universally known biblical story through the unusual perspective of Judas Iscariot. The performance features the SDSU Aztecs Concert and Chamber Choirs, as well as the San Diego State Symphony Orchestra. For tickets, you can visit the SDSU Theater Department.
On Saturday, December 3rd, the ACES Foundation will be hosting the 6th Annual Jingle Paws 1K and 5K Fun Walk from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College. Registration is from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. The ACES Foundation's mission is to support the El Cajon Animal Shelter. They have helped over 20 animals become adoptable by paying the surgeries, dental cleanings, and eye surgery in 2016. There will also be a Santa's Village immediately after the walk with doggy goodies and pet food vendors, pictures with Santa, refreshments, and a silent auction. The Santa's Adoption Village will have local rescue organizations and adoptable pets. Shots for Pets will also be available for vaccines. To register or get more information, visit acesfoundation.org.
You can take your kids to breakfast with Santa Claus at the Lakeside Community Center on Vine Street on Saturday, December 3rd from 8 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Lakeside firefighters and sheriff deputies will be serving up the community breakfast. In addition to meeting Santa, children can enjoy other activities as well at this festive community event.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce invites you to enjoy the spirit of Christmas on Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside on Saturday, December 3rd from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Santa and his elves are hard at work getting ready for Christmas at this annual event that attracts and delights people of all ages. There will be an atmosphere of an old-fashioned hometown Christmas. The event features all the sights and sounds of Christmas, including local school performances, Santa Claus, food and drinks, kids' activities, jumps, rides, booths, crafters, and lighting the community Christmas tree.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present a very special 15th anniversary holiday concert, Chansons de Noël, on Sunday, December 4th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church. This East County-based 70-voice chorus and 48-piece symphony orchestra uses San Diego vocal soloists performing in a venue with marvelous acoustics. The classical part of the program will present two works, Mozart's Te Deum and Sasson's Christmas Oratorio. Mozart composed the powerful Te Deum in 1769 at the age of 14. The chorus sings it in traditional Latin. Te Deum is the 7-minute classic that's become classic music fanfare for opening Christmas concerts, and it's as dramatic as it is beautiful. In contrast, the lyrical and light Christmas oratorio was composed by the Frenchman Camille Saint-Saëns. It's a famous work from the Romantic era of the 1800s. Sasson made his concert debut at age 10. The second part of the program will feature seasonal music from a variety of periods and places, including both familiar Christmas carols and some surprises. You'll recognize Christmas music in delightful new arrangements and enjoy some unique songs like Going to Bethlehem and No Time to Diet. For more information or tickets, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org. That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history.
It's the holiday season in warm, sunny East County. As we count our blessings, we can't help but think of those who also walked beneath that same benevolent sun years ago in somewhat less happy circumstances. One such person was Dr. Eben McGregor, one of very few doctors in East County in the 1930s, and the only game in town in Lemon Grove. Here are his words, written on Christmas Day, 1956, nearly 60 years ago. I awakened this morning thinking of my early days in Lemon Grove and of the dusty but very pretty little town as I first saw it. O little town of Lemon Grove, thousands of lemon trees, nearly everyone had a horse. Lots of people had asthma and had come here for the good climate. I thought of S.D. Eckler on Central Avenue, who came here with $30,000 and sunk it into land that was ruined by the Mattoon Act in the 1930s. Eckler started a huge rabbit ranch. Poor man took credit in the 30s, so people could have rabbit stew. I recall Dr. Charles Good, the dentist, with a big citrus ranch and a nice house, also on Central Avenue. He fixed your teeth for $1 in the 1930s. And good old Ed Fells, of the Fells Naphtha soap fortune. Not that he had any of that money. He taught me lobster fishing, completely illegal, and the ocean was cold in winter. I thought of that awful segregation case the school board started when they built the Mexican school, and then the Mexicans went on strike at the packing house. How the school board thereafter began to eliminate the Mexicans from the payroll. People like Andy Anderson, good people, Art Ahrens, Reverend Kurtz, and Herman Przybylski were part of that mess. Herman Przybylski had come here from Poland. He had a big citrus ranch and horses. He thought I was a communist because I had run for office on the Democratic ticket. I didn't know the meaning of the word communist in those days, but Herman had me investigated, and I will never forget when he came over and told me I was okay. We lived across the street from each other, for Pete's sake. I was his doctor, and no communist either. That reminded me of Herman's boy, Frank, who had terrible asthma and was good friends with the adopted son of Colonel and Mrs. Bryan, who lived in the Big Show Place, where Ambassador Hayes, later President Hayes, had visited. The adopted son was always tippling in the parlor and helping himself to the brandy during tea parties. But most of all, I remember Tony Sonka. He, who ran the famous general store next door to my home and medical office on Main Street, I remember saying to Tony, "Do you remember that truck that came through Lemon Grove on Christmas with flour and potatoes and somebody's old clothes and other stuff? It was all for the needy. You loaned us a little house to store the clothes. The Depression had struck so hard. I had several thousand patients who had no money. One month I worked from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, and I took in $86 in cash. Tony, you fed them, and I tried to keep them alive." Dear listeners, those were the words of Dr. Eben McGregor, who went on to lead the Veterans Administration for President Franklin Roosevelt in World War II. Dr. McGregor's house was designed by the great Alberto Traganza, also a Lemon Grove resident. That was in 1932, but it took 4 years to build because the doctor had no money, because his patients had no money. Patients with construction skills worked off their bills in sweat equity on the good doctor's house. It still stands today on Main Street, an important historic site. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
Jimmy Johnson won his 7th Sprint Cup Championship and his first in 3 years at the Ford EcoBoost 400 at Homestead Miami Speedway in Miami. The 41-year-old El Cajon native is now tied with Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty as a 7-time Premier Series champion. Johnson is also now the youngest 7-time winner. Petty was 42 when he won in 1979, and Earnhardt was 43 in 1994. "This is beyond exciting," team owner Rick Hendrick said. "I'm so proud of him." This has been a tough season for Johnson. He experienced the longest winless streak of his career at 25 starts. "Records are a mark, and they set something for everyone to shoot at," Petty said. "Jimmy and his team have done that tonight. They set a goal to get where they are, and circumstances and fate made it a reality. They did what they needed to do, and now they are at 7 championships. Congratulations to him and his team. Jimmy is a good champion, and this is really good for our sport." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. County supervisors have adopted new rules aimed at making sure people are safe when they visit our region's hopping number of breweries and wineries and decide to have a burger with their brew or more than just cheese with their wine. Supervisors adopted an ordinance and 2 new permits that will apply food safety rules found in restaurants to caterers who are hired to serve food at breweries, wineries, and other businesses. Supervisor Diane Jacob says the rules would be the first of their kind in California, serving as a model ordinance for other counties and cities. She says the ordinance establishes more flexibility and opportunities for caterers, food vendors, wineries, and breweries, adding, "In the end, it's going to help support, enhance, and expand our local farm and ag tourism efforts that we have been so excited about." But some local vintners are voicing concerns over potentially high costs of complying with the new requirements. Terry Kearns at Ramona Ranch Vineyard and Winery told East County Magazine, "We are still wrapping our heads around these changes and what the impact will be to small businesses, but it seems to put us at a disadvantage." The winery's co-owner, Nicole Moore, is president of the Ramona Valley Vineyards Association. The ordinance will allow caterers to handle the food service for wineries, breweries, and businesses that don't have full food service capabilities of their own, while making sure customers are protected by assuring foods are heated and refrigerated correctly, and that food preparers and servers have equipment for proper hygiene. The ordinance is scheduled to be heard again by the Board of Supervisors on December 14th for a second reading and public hearing. It would then take effect in 30 days if the Board approves that second reading. The county's Department of Environmental Health recommended these new rules after conducting a 3-month pilot study of 25 catering events at wineries, breweries, and private functions. Environmental health staff reported that they saw some common problems during the study that could increase bacteria and potential for people to get sick with foodborne illnesses. Those problems included food servers using ice coolers, which warm up when ice melts, rather than portable refrigerators to try to keep foods safely chilled. And the study found that less than half of food servers had access to sinks to wash their hands or clean utensils and equipment. The board's action will create 2 new types of permits. Breweries, wineries, and other businesses that want to use caterers to provide customers food will have to get host facility permits that assure they have readily accessible sinks for food servers as well as electricity, hot water, and commercial restrooms. Caterers will be allowed to get direct sales catering permits that will expand the traditional definition of catering from just serving private affairs to being able to sell directly to the public. The permits will also require caterers to have refrigeration and hand washing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery.
Help is needed to recover 2 golf carts stolen last week from the Tiernanog Horse Rescue Center east of Alpine. Or to purchase replacements, the need is critical, since one of the carts is used to carry feed for the horses. The owner posted shock and disbelief on Facebook, stating, "It takes a special kind of person to steal from horses rescued from abuse and neglect. We do what we do on bare bones, no frills budget. Every dollar we raise goes into caring for our horses and other animals." She adds, "Obviously, this is going to be a hard loss for us to recover from. We do not have theft insurance, and it looks like it will cost close to $15,000 to replace our 2 carts." Tiernanog, named after an Irish legend, partners with the County of San Diego Animal Shelter to take in abused and neglected horses relinquished by their owners. Since the partnership began, not a single horse that can medically be saved has been euthanized, thanks to Tiernanog's dedication in nursing these animals back to health. To learn more or to make a donation, you can visit horsesoftiernanog.org/reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, the network for social justice. This is Rebecca Williamson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
And now we hope our readers will enjoy this excerpt from a U.S. Army Band Christmas concert back in 2009. It's got a little bit of country in it for our East County listeners. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, Jim Hannibal, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at EastCountyMagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.